A young man fleeing for his life during a violent winter storm. The opening music to Wagner's Die Walküre. The young man is the Velsung hero Siegmund, who is the pawn in Wotan's plan to win back the ring. As we'll see, Siegmund is not only fleeing for his life, but also running towards his destiny. Hello, I'm Colin Ewer. I'm the scriptwriter and host of the Ryan Opera Centre recital series on classical WFMT. Lyrics commentaries are made possible through the generous support of the Patrick G. and Shirley Welch Ryan Foundation, in memory of their parents. The music excerpts you will hear in this commentary are courtesy of Warner Classics. The Ring of the Nibelung is based on Norse and Old German mythology. It's also inspired by Wagner's love of ancient Greek drama, particularly Aeschylus's trilogy of plays, the Oresteia, which combines the themes of politics and legend, told through the interaction between gods and humans. The Ring of the Nibelung is a tetralogy, which begins with a short introductory work, Das Rheingold, followed by a trilogy of longer ones, Die Walküre, Siegfried and Götterdämmerung. By the time Wagner was composing the music for Die Walküre in the mid-1850s, he was beginning to master the technique of dramatic composition. This can be heard in his use of leitmotifs, which are short, recurring musical themes associated with characters, objects, ideas and emotions. They provide an immensely complicated musical structure, in which motives are linked thematically and musically, and core motives are adapted, inverted and combined with others. Wagner originally created 32 leitmotifs for Das Rheingold, adding about 30 new ones for Die Walküre. But leitmotifs are not the only innovation in The Ring. Wagner invented a new verse structure incorporating Stabreim, an ancient verse form used in Old Norse and Germanic poetry. Stabreim is Wagner's word for alliteration, applying the same letter or sound at the beginning of adjoining or closely linked words. By using Stabreim in The Ring, Wagner believed he was establishing an authentic connection to German culture of the past. He also uses consonants to portray the positive or negative traits and personalities of his characters. For example, the letters W and L are associated with good characters, like Siegmund. There is an abundance of these consonants in Siegmund's glorious monologue about the coming of spring. Winterstürme wichen dem Wonnemund, in milden Lichte leuchtet der Lenz.
Winterstürme wichen dem Wonnemund, in milden Lichte leuchtet der Lenz.
By contrast, the letter G portrays unpopular or despised characters, like Alberich the Nibelung dwarf. In Das Rheingold, as Alberich slips and slides on the rocks in his attempt to catch the Rhine maidens, his text is dominated by the repeated use of the letter G. Garstig, glatter, glitzeriger Glimmer, he sings.
Garstig, glatter, glitzeriger Glimmer, wie gleit ich aus?
A considerable time period in the saga has taken place since the end of Das Rheingold and the beginning of Die Walküre. The amount of time is open to speculation. However, with the first appearance of human beings in the ring, we must deduce that enough time has elapsed for them to have evolved as a species and to have established various tribes and societies. In Die Walküre, we're reminded not only of what happened in Das Rheingold, but also what has happened in the interim. Das Rheingold began with a musical allegory depicting the birth of the universe. It's also a political allegory, a cosmic power struggle amongst gods, giants, dwarfs, and water nymphs. Die Walküre begins with a musical depiction of the human world, and is about relationships, two unhappy marriages, an adulterous incestuous love affair, and the heartbreaking separation between a father and his favourite daughter. Die Walküre is regarded as the first work in Wagner's mature style and has always been the most popular work in The Ring. This has a lot to do with the human characters, Siegmund, Sieglinde and Sieglinde's husband, Hunding. When Siegmund and Sieglinde fall in love with each other, Die Walküre appears to be just another opera with a conventional operatic love triangle. A handsome tenor falls in love with a beautiful soprano, who is married to a nasty husband, sung by a bass. But nothing in The Ring is as it seems. Siegmund and Sieglinde are twins, the children of Wotan and a mortal woman. Abandoned by Wotan and separated from each other in childhood, Siegmund and Sieglinde have endured lives of hardship. As we saw in Das Rheingold, Wotan is prevented from winning back the ring because of treaties he has made. In Die Walküre, Wotan's plan is for Siegmund to be a free-thinking, self-reliant hero who will succeed where he has failed. Sieglinde, like all female characters in The Ring, is treated badly. She has endured a miserable existence, forced into an abusive marriage with Hunding, a vicious warlord. Act 1 is a long recognition scene inspired by Greek drama. To create maximum emotion and excitement, Wagner adopts a theatrical technique called anagnorisis, which was devised by the Greek philosopher Aristotle. Anagnorisis takes place when a hero or heroine realise their identities, as well as comprehending the true nature of their predicament. At the climax of Act 1 of Die Walküre, Siegmund and Sieglinde realise that they've fallen in love with each other, even though they are brother and sister. Their love affair can be traced back to the Volsung saga, which Wagner adapted, but it was his decision to give incest such prominence. Wagner sees Siegmund as a rebel fighting against convention. Wagner, a rebel himself, defended incest in his prose work, Opera and Drama, referring to the Oedipus legend as proof of incest's naturalness. He believed that the incestuous relationship between Oedipus and his mother Jocasta produced a progeny that strengthened future generations. So Siegfried's purity of blood and his strength, enabling him to become the greatest hero in the world, is due to Siegmund and Sieglinde's incestuous relationship. Believing that it was his duty to reform and educate society, Wagner openly championed adultery, acknowledging his own adultery to his wife, Mina Plena. By defending incest and adultery, Wagner, who believed that sexual love was a life-enhancing restorative power, was not only criticising traditional marriage, but also attacking 19th-century sexual taboos. Wagner's music for Act One has been described as one of the most perfect through-composed love scenes ever created. Interwoven into its vast symphonic sweep are monologues for Siegmund and Sieglinde, in which we learn about their past and newfound emotions. Wagner uses leitmotifs to illustrate their meaning. A good example is his use of the Valhalla leitmotif, frequently associated with Wotan. From this we understand that the man Siegmund and Sieglinde refer to as their father Velza, and the old man who thrusts the sword into the ash tree in Hunding's home is none other than Wotan himself. And what about Hunding, Sieglinde's vicious husband? His brutality is apparent from his leitmotif, played by Wagner tubas, an instrument Wagner developed by combining a French horn and a trombone. Hunding is one of three characters in The Ring written for a dark-toned bass voice. The other two are Fafner the Dragon in Siegfried and Hagen in Götterdämmerung. Hunding's dark bass voice is even more threatening than his leitmotif. The There are sections in the first act of Die Walküre where Wagner realized that text was unnecessary. These orchestral sections, frequently associated with Sieglinde, portray her feelings and emotions, or as in this excerpt, played by the strings, her compassion for Siegmund's predicament. Leitmotifs give us a fascinating insight into Wagner's musico-dramatic technique. In Das Rheingold, as Wotan ponders the immensity of acquiring Valhalla, he points at the fortress with his sword. Wotan's thought is illustrated musically by the sword motif, one of the ring's core motifs. In Die Walküre, Wotan's thought has formulated into a plan. To help Siegmund in time of need, he has left a sword for him embedded in a tree trunk in Hunding's dwelling. As Siegmund calls out for the sword, Wagner reprises its motif.
Was kreist du hell im Glimmerschein? Welch ein Strahl bricht aus der Esche stand. Es blinden
By naming the sword Notung, needy, Siegmund develops the musico-dramatic structure even further. Just as he's about to pull it Excalibur-like from the tree, Wagner delays the musical climax by introducing music portraying Siegmund and Sieglinde's love, as well as the leitmotif associated with Alberich's curse, making it clear that their love is cursed and doomed. Wagner's musico-dramatic structure combines music, text, and stage action. By making us think of a far larger picture, and by using leitmotifs in this way, Wagner is adopting a theatrical device called alienation technique. In this scene, we're being encouraged not only to focus on Siegmund and Sieglinde's relationship, but also how their relationship has been affected by past events, and how it will have consequences for the future. Pulling the sword from the tree has sexual, social, and political ramifications. The motif of the curse reminds us of events in Das Rheingold, how Alberich learned the dire consequences of stealing the Rheingold, and how Fasolt was murdered by his brother Fafner because he chose love instead of gold. The gods return in Act II. Wotan, his wife Fricka, and Wotan's Valkyrie daughter, Brunhilde, the central character in the work. In this act, Wagner leads us through a complex web of moral and philosophical theories, showing us how their social and political implications will affect the characters. Wotan has become the terrifying character of Warfather. He's caught between two opposing worlds. He's learned from Irda, the primal Earth Mother, that the gods are not impregnable. He's been forced to devise his plan for Siegmund, including Siegmund's scandalous relationship with his sister. These are circumstances that he had not intended, but circumstances which will have major implications for him. Fricka, who is the voice of convention and reason, is intent on avenging Hunding. She sees through Wotan's schemes, reminding him that he represents the law and state. In their furious argument, their opposing moral and political views are expressed through conflicting musical ideas. Fricka wins the argument, and Wotan agrees to sacrifice Siegmund. Wotan's solution, according to Wagner, is to rise to the heights of tragic suffering, which he does in an extended soliloquy, which is both epic narrative and psychological analysis. This extraordinary monologue, which represents the core of the Ring cycle, is delivered by Wotan in a hushed voice, a Wagnerian Sprechstimme, with only the sparsest orchestral accompaniment introducing leitmotifs to underline the meaning of the text. At its conclusion, Wotan realizes that his suffering will only end when the gods have been destroyed. When we first encounter Brunhilde, her entire existence has been to serve her father Wotan, who refers to her as his will. During Act Two, her character develops. By listening to Wotan's monologue, she learns about the past and its consequences, important knowledge that she will later pass on to Siegfried. In the Annunciation of Death, or the Todesverkündigung scene, she is shocked when Siegmund refuses to accompany her to Valhalla, abandoning Sieglinde in the process. Brunhilde has never encountered another man whose strength and resolve are equal to Wotan's. By witnessing Siegmund's love for Sieglinde, Brunhilde begins to understand compassion and the power of love. By defying Wotan and siding with Siegmund, she becomes a rebel with a mind of her own. But Brunhilde and Siegmund's rebellion is short-lived when Wotan sacrifices Siegmund at the end of the act. So why does Siegmund have to die? Is his death just another example of a god sacrificing his son, a father's act of filicide? As a rebel, an outcast from society, a free-thinking, self-reliant hero, Siegmund seemed the answer to Wotan's dilemma. But as Wotan's puppet, Siegmund could never have won back the ring. Wotan knows that Fricka's aggression towards Siegmund and Sieglinde is justified. Only with Siegmund's death can Wotan assuage the dishonour he has brought to Fricka and himself through his duplicitous dealings. Furthermore, Siegmund is not the true hero of the saga. That title belongs to Siegfried, the character who inspired Wagner in the first place. Act 3 opens with the famous Ride of the Valkyries, the first time in the Ring that we've heard ensemble singing by a group of people. Valkyrie, or she who chooses warriors to die in battle, carry the bodies of dead heroes back to Valhalla. With the arrival of Brunhilde and Sieglinde, whom Brunhilde has saved from Wotan's wrath, Wagner introduces two new and important leitmotifs. As Brunhilde tells Sieglinde that she's pregnant with Siegmund's child, we hear the Siegfried motif for the first time. Sieglinde may be Wagner's most tragic heroine, but she's also Wotan's daughter, whose strength and belief in Siegmund inspired him to fulfill his short-lived destiny. Her boundless love for him also transformed Brunhilde. With music that we'll not hear again until the final moments of Götterdämmerung, Sieglinde gives Brunhilde her blessing, Wagner ensuring that Sieglinde's exit from the ring is in a blaze of vocal glory. In the final scene, we reach the core of the work, a personal family tragedy, the breakdown in the relationship between a father and his favourite daughter. There are parallels to Greek drama and Shakespeare. Wotan and Brunhilde's relationship mirrors those of Sophocles' King Creon and Antigone, or Shakespeare's King Lear and Cordelia. Wotan punishes Brunhilde's defiance by removing her divinity and immortality. In this final scene, the music is at its most symphonic, Wagner's complex musical material reaching its climax as Brunhilde pleads to Wotan that fire must surround the rock she's to be imprisoned on, so that only a hero will be able to penetrate the flames. Wotan, moved by Brunhilde's empathic love, agrees. With Wotan and Brunhilde's reversal of fortunes, the work reaches its moment of truth and discovery, its Aristotelian and Agnorisis. Brunhilde represents the future, while Wotan's misfortune consigns him to the past. Although he is a god, Wotan's tragedy makes him the most human of characters. Das Rheingold was about the love of power. Die Walküre is about the power of love. It's also about rebellion, the questioning relationship between man and deity, Wagner's personal attack against the conventions of 19th century society, and his regret that the political views he fought so hard for as a young man have come to nothing. In Lyric's New Ring, director David Poutney's approach is all about narrative, and his production of Die Walküre has been influenced by the 19th century Norwegian playwright Henrik Ibsen. Ibsen, like Wagner, was a rebel who confronted conventions and sexual mores in society and within the family circle. Poutney says that the story of this second installment may have become more human, more intimate, more psychological, but it remains a story which we will tell in the spirit of that magical pact between narrator and listener, once upon a time. Following Wotan's final monologue, his loving farewell to Brunhilde, he disappears through Loge the Fire God's flickering flames. His plans have come to naught, and he has sacrificed his only son in the process. Even his godly wisdom seems to have deserted him. He has failed to realise that the person who can save the gods from destruction is none other than his favourite daughter, Brunhilde, whom he has just punished by removing her immortality and sending her to sleep. It's time for us to bid farewell to Wotan, to Velza, and to Warfather. When we meet Wotan next in Siegfried, he will be nothing more than an observer called the Wanderer. And what of Siegfried, the long-awaited hero, growing in Sieglinde's womb? Will he succeed where his grandfather and father have failed? We'll find out about him and his story in Siegfried, the third installment of The Ring of the Nibelung.